You're listening to Package Your Genius, a weekly podcast designed to give you clarity around your calling and serve as a catalyst for your career, your business, and your big dreams. I'm your host, Amanda Miller Littlejohn.
Welcome back to Package Your Genius. I'm so excited today to have a special guest who's going to talk to us about a problem that I've encountered myself, and I've also seen with a number of clients who are building their personal brands, which turn into full-fledged businesses. And that is, how do you effectively manage the members on your team? My guest is Keith Stevenson, who is a leadership consultant that I worked with over the past year as he was making his exit from corporate America. Now, what's unique about Keith is that he was formerly a principal who turned around several poor performing schools. And then he went into corporate America to help develop schools and train principals and teachers so that they could really deliver the educational and learning materials to the kids in a way that they could best receive it. And so during our work together, it was really fascinating to me to see the parallels between a school environment and an organization, a business, right? So it was fascinating, all of our conversations, and I have taken so many lessons from Keith about how to be a better manager and how to lead teams, especially when there's conflict involved. So I wanted to share an interview with him so that you could get some of his tips and strategies on how to be a more effective manager, because I know some of us don't have a ton of management experience when we set out on our own. So how to be an effective manager, and also how to turn around a potentially toxic work environment if you find yourself in one. So welcome, Keith.
Amanda, it's great to be here.
Thanks so much for being here. So why don't you tell us, I mean, I gave my spiel about you, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you currently do?
Sure. Well, I'm going to start by giving just a little background, Amanda, if you don't mind. As you stated, I was formerly a school principal. And, you know, most folks growing up, they have this image of, you know, like kind of this big bad man or this like nasty woman who leads a school. And folks forget that school, just like any other company or business, they're just organizations, so they have to be led. So, you know, in my principalships, I've led schools as large as, you know, 1,000 students. And a school with just to give you an idea from an organizational perspective, what a school with 1,000 students looks like is, you know, you may have, 125 teachers in the building, and you may have, you know, 25 instructional aides. You have all different types of departments that you're expected to leave. You have assistant principals, you have department chairs. So it's a really complex, multi-layered organization. So as a principal of a school, you really have to figure out, you know, how to communicate with folks, how to provide feedback, how to hire effectively, how to retain your great talent. I mean, these are all different skills that one must learn when being a school principal. So it's amazing to me when I work with folks outside of the kind of educational arena, when they have, you know, what I would consider, just based on my past experiences, I'd consider relatively small organizations. You have 25 people, you have 30 people reporting to you. I mean, that's almost unheard of in the management world in which I existed for years. So as a principal, I transitioned from there to become a leadership consultant with school leaders, in addition to that, some non-educational folk, to be able to get them to really be able to maximize the performance of their teams, their departments, and if they're like a president of an organization, of the entire organization. So being able to focus on the bottom line from a management perspective and just being able to like kind of crush the environment and do a very good job.
Awesome. Awesome. And so now you're the founder of Keith Stevenson Leadership Consulting, where you do support principals and managers and leaders and help them become more effective, help them work better with their teams, help them be more powerful leaders and managers. When we first met, you had published a book called The Principal's Blueprint. And in that book, which I started to read just to get to know your expertise and know your work before we started working together, I was very surprised that the book was such a page turner and had so many nuggets that were applicable to me. And I am not in the educational industry. I'm not an educator in any I guess I am technically an educator, but not in the traditional sense. So obviously I have Package of Genius Academy, where I train and coach women to become more visible. But in terms of the technical academy, a collegiate environment, or even a secondary school environment, I'm definitely not entrenched in that at all. And yet the book took me through so many different lessons that I found to be, and not just for me as an employer or as a business owner, but even as a parent, right? I remember we had a conversation about some of the lessons. I was like, oh my God, Keith, like I'm going to use these strategies even to get my kids under control. So tell us a little bit about some of the top mistakes that you saw principals making when running schools and some of those top lessons from the book.
Obviously, you know, you have different challenges with any organization that you lead, just because you have some organizational specific challenges. But generally speaking, you know, as a school leader, part of the challenge is really being able to understand the organization prior to you going in and being able to make really substantive changes. So, for example, and one of the differences between kind of schools and, let's say, if you're running IBM or AT&T or something like that, with regard to the school year, there's a definite start and stop of the year. So you have the first month, the second month, the third month, and it goes up through month 10, and then month 11 and 12, which are typically June, July, August, there's a planning part that occurs. In corporate America, that doesn't really occur. It's just around the clock. So for new leaders, when I see coming in, part of the challenge is being able to be patient enough to understand all of the layers in the organization with regard to the reporting structures, with the feedback structures, with the how folks are being evaluated. It is critical for any new leader to be able to understand kind of how that flow occurs. And challenges, mistakes that folks typically make mistakes when they come in and they just immediately make changes without understanding all of the different aspects of the organization. Most leaders are provided with like a moonlight period. So I would say that period is typically 3 to 4 months where they give you an opportunity to be able to kind of make mistakes without really being held accountable for it. As a new leader, it is critical to be able to take that time to understand all of the different pieces within the organization before you go in and start making whole-scale changes. Because what happens is when you make those whole-scale changes, you discredit any work that's been done previously. So you have folks who actually have their feelings hurt and you can't maximize their work output if, in fact, there's hurt feelings.
Let me stop you there for a second. So when you talk about principals coming in, a new principal coming in and changing everything, would that apply to a new manager coming in to an organization, maybe the new head of a department or a new CEO? Do you see that as a parallel that might that our listeners might be able to understand?
Yeah, it's definitely a parallel. A new manager of an organization.
Or even a department.
Of a department, of a team. It could be a team leader where you're responsible for 2 or 3 people or, you know, 7 people. Take time to understand the organization so you can make sound decisions that actually result in real improvements, as opposed to you just really scratching the surface with decisions.
I love that. It kind of speaks to my favorite of the 7 habits of successful leaders: seek first to understand, then understood. Shifting gears for a second, let's talk about smaller teams, smaller organizations, smaller companies, people like me. You know, you've given me some really, really great advice that was powerful. Just to give listeners some feedback, when I first encountered Keith, I had a limiting belief that I did not have the capacity to manage people. I considered myself a creative person who was really good at what I do. But in terms of managing teams, I felt like that was something that I just was not good at. And after having several conversations with Keith, he really gave me some specific tips on how to make that process more effective. And you really empowered me. So I thank you. I've thanked you before, but I want to thank you publicly here in this forum. You've really empowered me to go in with a strategy, a checklist of items that I want to have in place whenever I'm bringing on a new person to my team. And I've realized that whenever I follow those tips and I adhere to that checklist, it's always so much more productive. So can you share with our listeners, you know, during the hiring process, some people who are listening haven't even brought on one person yet, or maybe they have one or two people under them and it's not really working, or they know it could be working better. So when it's time to make that first hire or that next hire, what are some of the red flags that new employers should be looking out for during the interview, during those first few emails back and forth with the candidate, or even those first interactions with a new team member?
Well, the first thing, Amanda, is the manager must participate in the interview process. One of the mistakes that managers make sometimes, depending on the size of the organization, team, or department, is that they will kind of delegate the interview process to folks on their team. Mm-hmm. And hiring is such a critical part of building your team that the manager should never just delegate the whole interview process to folks who, you know, other team members. They have to participate in the interview process.
And I'll stop you there too, because I know in addition to having other team members, smaller companies are also relying on consultants increasingly, and they're outsourcing the hiring process altogether. So you would say that's not a good idea?
I would think that I don't think that that's a good idea. And I understand the necessity to outsource, but it's, at some point, as the manager, I would encourage the manager to work very closely with the HR department. And at some point in the process, the candidate must come before the manager. You can't outsource it all where you have an HR department who's doing the entire hiring process. And the first day the new employee meets the manager is the first day that they're on the job. I think that's a huge mistake.
Okay. But in terms of red flags from the candidates, what should we be looking for to say, okay, definitely not a good fit?
So you know, I unfortunately, I learned this one the hard way, Amanda. I think a mistake that a lot of managers make, and I've made it myself, is when you're interviewing someone and you're asking them questions and they're responding in, you know, however they choose to best respond to the answer. And in your mind, you are like altering the answers because you're saying, I can change this person to make them type A, and they're really like a type B personality. You're thinking to yourself. So in your mind, you're like playing all of these games. And then at the end of the interview that went okay, you feel that you have this star because you have manipulated all of their answers in your head. Okay. Right. So the mistake is what people tell you in the interview is typically who they are. Okay. Now, I guess there could be some like margin or error, you know, to the left or to the right a little bit if we were to quantify it that way. But what you get from the candidate is who they are. Take it at face value. Now, can you work with the person to develop them into the worker you want them to be? Of course. Can you develop a rock star? Of course, over time. But don't assume when they give you answers that they just came up short on their answer and, you know, you create this rock star answer in your mind. That's just a mistake a lot of managers make. Just accept the candidate kind of for who they are and make sure that you understand that that's the starting point. And just understand that you have a responsibility as a leader to help develop that candidate or that new team member once they get started with you.
So don't go into the whole scenario with rose-colored glasses. Be real with yourself. You know, that's funny because I did an interview once with a candidate for an executive assistant position. And one of the things that I noticed during the interview was she was chewing gum, which I thought was interesting. It seemed like she was very comfortable and a little too familiar to be in the interviewing stage. And definitely I ignored it and regretted ignoring it. And we went on to work together. And that was kind of an issue, that lack of decorum. Yeah. And some level of professionalism that I would have liked to have seen. So are you saying things like that we shouldn't ignore? Or because I thought, oh, if she's really good at what she does, this can be something that can be, you know, I can tell her, I can give her some advice, tell her not to do that. Are you saying we should ignore things like that? Or are those things that can be fixed?
Well, I mean, obviously that one could be fixed by just saying, spit out the gum. But right. If you look at it a little more deeply, just understand that she lacks some degree of decorum coming into it.
Right.
So while you could address the immediate problem by just saying, you know, spit out the gum, the fact is, you know, maybe she comes to meetings with flip-flops on when she's supposed to have pumps on.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Other issues are going to keep popping up if that's where she is in the interview. Because you're bringing your best to the interview.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, Amanda, it's weird because, you know, I've interviewed, when I say I've interviewed hundreds of people, I've literally interviewed hundreds of people for teaching positions, for assistant principal positions. I've interviewed hundreds of people. And in the last 10 years, there seems to be a decline of like interview behaviors. And I think it's largely because of the techno age, where you have a lot of folks who just have these like cyber relationships with folks, and they really don't know how to present themselves in an interview where, you know, you may have four or five people around the table and everybody is scrutinizing everything you do. This may just be new territory for them. And I think, like I said, largely it's just because you have folks who have text, cyber, email relationships throughout high school, throughout college, throughout their work world, and they don't understand the importance of presenting yourself professionally and, you know, the manners that are required to stick out in a good way during the interview process.
But do you think that, you know, after having all of these hundreds of interviews that you've conducted, do you have hope? Because we're looking at millennial workers more and more, and there's definitely a difference in the culture and a difference in maybe what their parents told them or what their professors told them about what's appropriate or not appropriate for an interview or for the workplace in general. Do you have hope that there are still people out there who carry themselves a certain way? Or do we all as employers need to just prepare for a total shift in communication standards?
Well, it just depends. So to answer your question, yes, there's definitely hope. Okay, we're not in a hopeless society. So there's definitely hope. You know, understand what you need the person to do.
Right.
So if this is not like a person who is an outwardly facing individual as it relates to the organization, well, maybe it's okay if this person chews gum. You know what I mean? But if this is someone who is going to be in front of a microphone representing your organization, you have to look very closely at those red flags, perhaps.
I love that. I think that's awesome. To make sure that the position you're hiring for, you take into account what that person presents. And yeah, it may not matter. It may not matter if the person's really, really efficient at, you know, WordPress and social media. Maybe it's fine that they chew gum because they're never going to be in person with your clients, in person with anyone affiliated with your organization. I love that as a tip. When we spoke, you were giving me tips on the not just the hiring process, but the management process. So for those people who are bringing on their first one or two employees, if they've never really managed someone before, or they've never managed a team effectively before, which I thought was more the situation that I was in, what are some tips that you can give them for making that employer-employee or manager-managee relationship productive?
Wow. This is a loaded one because, you know, I can do a whole class on this, okay?
Oh, perfect.
But I think it's important to be able to articulate your expectations from the very start, okay? And understand that Your employee cannot read your mind. So it doesn't matter how like upset you are based on performance or based on the overall performance of a team or an individual or what have you. If you do not articulate your expectations, you almost can't hold folks accountable for achieving them. Okay?
Right. Should those be articulated verbally, written? Like, what are some tips on just making sure, you know, no one can say, well, I don't remember you saying that.
So typically within organizations, if you're looking at like discipline, I'm not jumping right to discipline, but there's some overlap here. Okay. Typically folks do a verbal warning, a written warning, and then a written level of reprimand, and then either like suspension or termination, depending on what the issue is. Okay. So when it comes to like establishing expectations, you can kind of apply, you know, the same mode. So, you know, it starts off with verbal and then it progresses to some written form. Now, with expectations, I mean, that could be also supported by an employee handbook that folks need to be like reminded on, you know, going to view. But if there's no real like handbook, I know a lot of small organizations really don't have, you know, handbooks to go back and refer to. The expressing, I like this, I don't like that, you know, providing regular feedback is also key, which is, you know, something I'll talk about next. You set the expectations and then you provide feedback, regular feedback. So it may be weekly, it may be daily, it could be, you know, biweekly. But I think that in terms of direct reports, everyone needs feedback. The more feedback that you can provide, and this could be in written format, this could be in just verbal feedback, but provide good feedback, because as the leader of the organization, as the leader of the team, or the leader of the department, you establish where the North Star is, okay? And you have to be able to convey to your employees what their performance is, if it's meeting standard or if it's not. And this is not one of these things where you stand up and yell and you scream and you're doing poorly and this and that. I am not recommending you do that. I am recommending that you provide regular feedback so it never has to get too emotional. It's simply the process that you use to elevate the performance of individuals and ultimately elevate the performance of your team.
That was one of the takeaways that you gave me, the not just the providing of the regular feedback, but also setting that regularly scheduled meeting or conversation so that everybody knew when the conversation was going to happen and everybody knew what was on the agenda to be discussed. And in that way, we were always on the same page. So if it was something that kept coming up on the agenda week after week, which has happened to me before, I realized, okay, it's not me, it's you, because, you know, I told you this last week and the week before that, and it's still, you're still not doing it the way we discussed. So that was actually very empowering to me, because I think I had in my head, well, maybe I'm not communicating clearly enough prior to taking your tips into consideration. But after having a track record of, you know, meeting agendas and knowing that, okay, this is what we talked about, we went over this, and you're still just refusing to do something the way I asked you to, it's not me.
Right. And just imagine, Amanda, how much time you could have saved if, in fact, you could have identified some of those shortcomings during the interview process.
Right. Like someone who's just not going to follow directions to a T. Yeah. It's just, I mean, I think that is a huge thing to look at in the interview, or even the application process before it even gets to the interview. If you have, I've heard people say, put in your application, leave a direction that if the person didn't read through the application instructions clearly enough, they'll miss it. So maybe it's send this, don't send this in an attachment, send it in the body of an email, and make the subject of your email a certain line or whatever. And that helps you to see how much does this person pay attention to detail? How much do they follow directions? Do they just go rogue and do what they want to do?
Or it's as easy as like an old school reference check, which it's amazing how folks won't check folks' references from their like previous employers. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's kind of weird because we live in this litigious society. So former employees are sometimes guarded in terms of what they'll share with you. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if you call them and you're just like, look, I want to hire XYZ. Look, this is just kind of off the record. And ask specifically what you need this person to do. And respect the opinion of the previous employer, because sometimes they will give you great insight into what you can expect from that person if, in fact, you were going forth to hire them.
That's a great tip. And I know people, self-included, skip that very important process of checking references. And so just a reminder to everyone listening, make that a part, no matter how big or small your company is, make that a part of your process, because everyone has someone that should be able to vouch for them if they're looking for a role with your company. Okay, moving along. If we've got our employee on board, we've hired them, things are going okay, we're still in that honeymoon phase, right, that you mentioned, the first 3 months or so. Uh-huh. If we notice that our employee or our team member is starting to go astray, whether they're starting to come in late or, you know, they're missing deadlines and they're just not working to our standards, the standards that we articulated when we set those expectations, if they are not meeting those expectations, what do we do to begin to get them back on track?
So there's a number of strategies that you can use. And one includes either yourself, and the other that I'm going to recommend would include, you know, setting them up with some type of like mentor or something like that, depending on, you know, kind of what your organization allows you to provide in terms of supports.
But what if it's just me?
Yes,
I am my organization.
If it's just you. If it's just you. So you have an organization and you're running and you oversee three people.
Right.
Right? There's a couple different ways to skin a cat, right? So I think that you have both the carrot and the stick. So one thing that you can do.
Cats don't like carrots.
Yeah. We're stay away from cats. I didn't know what it was anyway. I thought it was.
A horse is like carrot, so we're skinning a horse now.
You can't hold me accountable when I didn't know.
Okay.
But so you have a carrot and a stick, right? So one thing you can do is you have folks who will respond to praise, and not necessarily their own praise, but praise from others. So let's say that you have a team with, like I said, three people. Okay. And employee A is doing a great job. Employee B is doing a mediocre job. And employee C is doing a terrible job. You could recognize employee A for doing a great job. And that could be a motivating factor for employee C. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do clearly as a manager is to be able to share specifics as to why this person is being recognized. So you can't just say, we're going to give this plaque to employee A for doing a great job, because a great job really means nothing. You're not taking advantage of a teachable moment for employee C who's doing poorly. So you might want to say, you know, we're going to give you this certificate for coming to work on time, for handing in all of your assignments on time, and, you know, they met all of our, you know, the specifications, and we got feedback from, you know, whoever they were sent out to, great feedback.
No,
okay?
Missed deadline.
Yes, you don't miss deadlines. You hear the deadlines, what have you. And you could do like weekly celebrations or biweekly celebrations. And that may be enough to get employee C, who is underperforming, to be able to pull his stuff together to be able to improve, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or if that's not like strong enough, then you kind of have to pull the person in and say, look, you're simply just not cutting the mustard. But be very specific in your feedback. So just don't say, you know, you're doing a poor job. Just say, you know, we have vendors who are saying that you're not speaking to them professionally, or you're not getting to work on time, or you're missing deadlines, or, you know, you're not closing enough deals. Whatever your bottom line that speaks to success for your organization is, be very specific with the feedback that you're providing that person. So once again, it starts off with verbal. So verbal praise.
Verbal criticism.
or the stick, you know, verbal reprimands or whatever, right? And then it just gets progressively more. So an oral reprimand, and then something written, and then like suspension. And ultimately, if the person does not, you know, change their ways, then ultimately you're just going to have to kind of cut ties with them. And it's a difficult decision. But I think by the time you make that decision, you would have had so much communication with this person around what they specifically need to do to improve that I don't think that it ends up being a real difficult decision in the end.
Agreed. One of the other things that you shared with me that I've shared this with multiple people, some of my other clients, as well as friends who are growing their enterprises and leading their teams, was when you first see an issue with your employee, say something and address it immediately. Don't let it fester. That was something you shared with me. And I have, you know, been known to not say anything and just kind of like see if it's going to change. And you said, no. As soon as you see something, like immediately say something or else it can grow and get worse. And I think that for people who are working with team members, we can allow these things to pile up, and then you get to a point where you snap or you're upset or you're frustrated when it really didn't have to go that far if you would have stopped and had a conversation and given them that feedback that you mentioned. So when we see someone doing something, like, how we don't want to be micromanagers, obviously we don't want to always be nitpicking at our people. What are some things that you would address immediately, or maybe you've had to address immediately with the people who you've worked with? And how do you say that in a way that's not messy or that can be best received?
I get it.
I'm too nice, Keith. I think that's my crime.
Well, look, yes, I think that you need to address things immediately. The thing is you always want to be respectful. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can say something negative or be authoritative with how you say something, but still be respectful. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's really the key. But you just pull it, man, and you're just straightforward with it. And you know, sometimes conversations result in a better understanding for you too as the leader. So it could be a situation where, you know, you have somebody who's like coming late to work, or what you expect to be late to work. So, you know, somebody's supposed to be at work at 8:30 and they're routinely not getting there until 8:45.
Right.
But there's like a reason for it. You know, there's like a childcare issue, or somebody is dealing with some like marriage challenges, or you may have like some parental care issues, not just child care, but you know, your own parents who you're dealing with, and you have to wait for somebody else to come over and they're messing you up. And you know, as a manager, it's best for you to know that than for you to say, this person is always coming in late, blah, 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 never address it. And you know, you have this kind of tension that's filled. And as a manager, you may have the option to say, look, all right, well, just come here at 9. You can build your day around a 9 a.m. start as opposed to an 8:30 start that always starts late at 8:45 because this person's late. You had no knowledge of why they're coming late. Now you pull them in and you have the conversation with them. And now you're like, get to the bottom of it. So I think that, you know, I think an honest, open conversation, and probably your first step needs to be to determine why this behavior is occurring. Because ultimately, as the manager, you want to be able to like curb this behavior. You don't want to terminate the person. You're just trying to understand why this person is not meeting your expectations. So it's almost a fact-finding conversation that occurs first.
Mm-hmm. And then once you find that they're the reason for being 15 minutes late every single day doesn't make sense. Like they're stopping at 7-Eleven to get coffee.
Right.
Or their gas tank was on E and they didn't get gas the night before. Like, and it's just stupid reasons. What do you do?
So, yeah, I'm going to use one of my Keithisms, okay? So once you realize that this person is simply bojangling, mm-hmm, and not coming in just because they need to push
life management, poor life skills.
Yeah, they just need to push snooze 3 times in the morning when they should have gotten up. You have to start laying down the law in terms of you need to be here by 8:30. And if you can't do that, the next time you're late, don't give them 2 and 3 times and 4 times and 5 times. The next time you're late, we're going to put you on a performance improvement plan. And if it persists, we're going to take further disciplinary actions against you, up to and including termination.
Mm.
I know, it kind of sounds like I've said that before, huh?
But you know what, though, Keith? That didn't even sound, like, harsh. It just sounded very matter of fact. Like, hey,
yeah.
It is. If this happens again, we're going to put you on a plan. And if the plan doesn't work, we'll have to consider other action.
That's right.
I felt like he's serious, but I didn't feel attacked. So I think that's a great tone to take. And I think, especially for the women who are listening, if you're anything like me, I think our culture and society really encourages us to be nice, right? So one of my things is, well, I don't want to come across as a bitch. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so, but I think sometimes that gets confusing because you do have to be firm when you're talking to people who are working on your behalf, working for you, and carrying the banner of your brand. You have to protect your brand at all costs. And yep. So it doesn't have to be an argument. It doesn't have to be you going off for you to get your point across. As my husband always says, it can just be a conversation. It doesn't have to be a confrontation.
That's
and
right.
I live by that.
And your position, if your position can be supported by data,
right.
It's very difficult to support data. So, you know, on September 17th, September 18th, September 19th, and September 20th.
You were 15 minutes late.
15 minutes late. And now it is September the 23rd. And we need this to change ASAP.
Yeah, I love that. And so that goes back to you just making a note of things, keeping regular records and being in regular communication with your people. You mentioned as one of the things that managers and leaders need to do to ensure that we are communicating effectively and everyone's on the same page and people understand expectations, that we need to have clear communication processes in place. So what does that look like for someone who's leading a large team and for someone who's leading a smaller team?
Whenever I speak to groups, this is like kind of the favorite thing to talk about in these communications, because as a leader, right, you want to have this like open door policy,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have communication systems in place. If not, you'll be bombarded by folks' issues all day,
mm-hmm.
whether it's by way of email, whether it's by way of somebody doing the soft knock on the door and looking in the window to say, can I come in? And of course you say yes, but you know, they're taking you away from what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to be doing. So in terms of communication strategies or systems, I think that you meet with the team at least once a week. Now, I don't care if the team is 150 or if the team is 3. I think that you have to have a meeting once a week. Now, let me add this in. If your team is 150, you're not going to pull 150 in every week, but you will pull your direct reports in, who may be middle management, and you're going to meet with them every week. And you are going to have conversations in terms of the performance. You'd like to have your you'd like to base your conversations on data points. But if you have a small team where you're not generating all of this data all the time, simply a check-in to determine what your team members are doing and how they can support each other and helping them overcome challenges. You want to be able to systematize those things by way of holding weekly meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And those meetings do not need to be 2 hours long, 30 minutes long max.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Send an agenda out the day before so everyone knows what's coming down the pipe, and have a weekly meeting with your team. And I always liked 10 o'clock every Friday morning or 10 o'clock every Monday morning, but it was a set scheduled time each week so folks can plan around it.
I love that. I love that. Well, that's fantastic. We are now more aware of the red flags we need to be looking out for, how to set communication processes in place. I love that regularly scheduled meeting. It's something that I actually resisted for a long time. But then when I put it into motion put it into practice as you had advised me, I found it extremely helpful because, again, if we have an agenda and a few of the items are basically check-in points from something we talked about last week, it was really easy to see if we had made progress or had not made progress. And it was almost like the agendas told the story of the team's productivity. You know, if we haven't moved any further than we were last week, what's really going on here? And so I didn't even have to say very much because just having those regularly scheduled meetings did the work for me. Thank you, Keith, so much for sharing these gems with us. If you could share where people can find you online and connect with you and learn more about the great work that you're doing, your books, your resources, your toolkits, please, please share those details.
Address my website is at www.ks, that's K as in Keith, S as in Stevenson, ksleadership.com, www.ksleadership.com. On Twitter, I'm at Keith the Leader, and then on Facebook, I'm at KT Stevenson, and on LinkedIn, I'm at Dr. Keith Stevenson. I have a few books, as Amanda alluded to early on, Principal Cycle, great book, great feedback, and I just had a latest, another release about a month ago. School Administrators Communication Guide, 100 plus letters you cannot lead without. So while this is really targeted at school leaders, I have a lot of non-educators who are buying the book, and their feedback has been great too. Both of them can be found on Amazon. So that's School Administrators Communication Guide and the Principal's Cycle. Amanda, I'd like to thank you for being on today. It was a blast.
Thank you so much for making time in your busy schedule. Congratulations on your new consulting company and your new book that you have out, The School Administrator's Handbook, is amazing. I mean, it really is. Those letters in the book are simply a great way, a great shortcut for people who maybe aren't the best at having those crucial conversations the way you are, like you're really good at it. But a lot of us have issues bringing these things up to people. So I would highly recommend the book of letters for anyone who has to talk to their team, discipline their team, talk about somewhat uncomfortable conversations, especially if you are within the education space.
Hey, Amanda, just let me add that in because I didn't include this when I talked about the School Administrator's Communication Guide. When you purchase the book, I actually provide a loaded flash drive where you are able to, in Word format, so you're able to kind of customize these letters for your own need. Mm-hmm. And so instead of writing this 45-minute letter or even retyping what's in the book, you're able to, like I said, modify these letters immediately. So it cuts your work time down to, 5 minutes, 10 minutes to write proven letters. I mean, these letters have been proven. It's everywhere from everything from, you know, welcoming parents in to, you know, to brand new school year all the way to, sorry, but, you know, today will be your last day, please. return your keys and your laptop to the main office that you're leaving. Dr. Stevenson will sign your departure slip.
That's hardcore. And I love how you say that with like zero emotion because you've done it so many times. But, you know, I'm thinking, Keith, and as I've said to you before, I mean, maybe it's time to do a part two handbook for those of us who are not in the education world, because we need this help. We really, really do.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it now. So I look for a launch in, I don't know, 6 to 7 months. You've worked with me in the past, so you know when I say these things are going to happen, they typically do.
They're going to happen. Well, awesome, Keith. Thanks again so much for being a part of Package Your Genius. And for those of you who are listening, thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Subscribe on SoundCloud as well as Stitcher. And a funny thing that I heard on another podcast recently, if you have a review that's less than 5 stars, feel free to keep that to yourself. But thanks so much for listening, guys. We will see you next week.
Thanks so long.